On this edition of Inside Boxing Live, we're going to take a look back at this past weekend. Regis Prograis was a winner. John Ryder was a winner. Dillian White was a winner. All three of those winners are going to have even bigger fights in the next year. We're also going to look ahead. It is a weekend of trilogies. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez versus Juan Francisco Estrada. Number three, Tyson Fury, Derek Chisora. Number three, we're going to talk about it all. Welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live, a product of John Boy Media. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, former world champion, here with you every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in every single week. Episode one, number 195, which kind of blew my mind when I typed that in the notes. I think this is episode like at least 15 with Chris Algieri officially on board. So it's a long lineage. We're closing in on 200 episodes, which is absolutely wild to me. How are you, Chris Algieri?
I'm doing great, and I like that number, but we gotta pump them up. Those are rookie numbers. We gotta
195 in the boxing podcast world is an eternity. I started this show the Monday after Triple G Canelo number one.
Ooh, okay. So we have some history there, because Triple G Canelo three, or Canelo Triple G number three, we did our live watch party.
So it's coming full circle. Jim Lampley was my first guest. Wilder was on that show. It was a ride, and now we're here.
Oh, I'm jealous you had Jim Lampley, man. First guy, I'd love Jim. I'd love to be able to wrap it up with him.
I've had him on a few times. I had him on during the COVID. When times were lean. We just went down memory lane. That was sick. And then I had him on, like, he was originally supposed to be the Triller, the face of Triller, like the voice.
I know.
To call Teofimo Cambosos when it was supposed to be on Triller. And
he would have called my fight when I fought Le Pierre. I fought 2 months after Teofimo was supposed to fight.
Right. And I had him on when it got announced. He came on that night and was all excited, and everyone was excited. Awesome. And Triller just fell out. Marv Nation this weekend. That was a pretty good pay-per-view. This is the run of order here on what we're gonna be talking. We're gonna get into the Regis Prograis win. We're going to talk about Dillian White and Ryder. They all three of them won. Then we'll get into our previews, Fury, Chisora, and then Chocolatito Estrada 3. Regis Prograis. We'll start with Regis Prograis. Probably the best fight of the weekend, maybe. If you had Dillian White and Franklin. But the most important or significant win came from Regis Prograis. I thought he looked outstanding. I mean, this is the he fights like every fan at home wants a fighter to fight. Oh, I want to see my guy stick and move. I want to see him with power. I want to see him flashy. I want to see him entertain. I want to see him knock out a fighter when he has him hurt. That was like an A-plus performance from Pro. He eliminates and takes out Chan Cepeda. He is a two-time world champion at 140 pounds. Did practically everything he wanted in there. I only had him losing one round, which was the first one. How impressed were you with Regis Prograis after, you know, seemingly 3 years out of the spotlight?
Yeah, very impressed, because you know that version of Regis Prograis, I think, is the best that I've ever seen. I always felt like he was missing certain aspects of his game. You know, he's obviously a very strong guy. He's very aggressive, tends to get hit more than he should in past fights. But this fight, he showed a much improved upper body movement and head and defense. Came in there, was very smooth, relaxed, in and out, rolling his head forward. He's heavy over his front foot because he's an aggressive guy, but he was smart with his movement, his in and out with his upper body, his lateral side to side shoulder rolls and movement was very good. His rhythm was very nice. I really liked, you know, that fight in terms of how Prograis looked. I did not think Chone looked very good, you know, which is a shame. He's a buddy of mine. He just couldn't put it together that night. He looked good in the first one or two rounds, like you said, but by the fourth, he was completely. He just looked tight and hesitant. The power that was coming at him was too much, and Prograis was just too hard to hit. So, yeah. And it was just a matter of time. Prograis had fun. I mean, he kept them to single digits in terms of connects, which, you know, you did the count. I mean, it was a masterful performance from Prograis. And like I said, that style of Prograis I like more than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, the only thing I would nitpick, it's a very small nitpick because he was outstanding, would be the defense. We talked about this last week. Gets hit clean, but like he relies on reflexes. And when you get out there in age, obviously your reflexes decline. It just isn't brain science.
And so, he's not the youngest guy either. He's already passed the 30 mark. You know, he's approaching that. Now, I don't want to use the word over the hill because I fought way after that with some good performances, but he's past that prime age.
He's in this prime still, but it's like almost at the top of the hill, but he's still going to have good performances on the other side of that hill. Yeah, he's peaking. Mm-hmm. But like the one thing I'm worried about is the defense and reflexes. He might have to change up his whole style, which would, you know, take away from his offense, but the double jabs, the power punching, the defense, like we just said, was really good at times.
He looked like he had a plan. He wanted to land that left hand. He knew that he's also, I don't know if you ever, I mean, you're the numbers guy. You're the whatever. Look how many southpaws that program has fought.
I think it's like three or four in a row.
Yeah. No, his whole career. He really excels at fighting southpaws, being a southpaw, which is rare. Most southpaws have trouble with fighting southpaws. They're usually really good against orthodox fighters, but Prograis does really, really well against southpaws. He has that down, that style. I've seen him look mediocre at times against orthodox guys, but he's always got that power. He's always got that ability to beat guys up, and he's just willing to. He's a warrior. He's just willing to make the fight happen, and that's what you said. The fans. He's got a fan-friendly style for sure.
Yeah, he's so entertaining, and he says all the right things, and I think all fans like him, all fighters like him. I was like kind of like in a weird way, like pissed that we like were. Didn't get to see him for the last 3 years or didn't get to see him in important fights because, like, this is a guy that could be a legitimate star in the sport. I think he's the best at 140. Put out my updated rankings on Sunday. I didn't really look too much into it. I just literally was sitting on the couch and just listed 10. And I had Prograis 1. I had Catterall 2, which pissed people off. I had Taylor 3, and I had Ramirez 4, Subriel Matias, Teofimo Lopez in that list as well. But I think Prograis, right now, it's what have you done for me lately? Like, Taylor didn't look that great in his last performance, struggles with the weight. We'll see how he looks against Catterall in the rematch. But you can make a very strong case. Prograis is the best at 140 right now.
I can't because Taylor beat him. And Taylor, like, he had
one. Taylor's number one.
I do. You know, he had a bad performance his last fight against Jack Catterall, but that put more question marks than anything. We don't have any answers. It's not like, oh, wow, Jack Catterall should be the best, because he seemingly beat Taylor that night. But I don't know. If Taylor goes out there and washes Catterall, the first fight is gone. The thought of it's gone. Catterall is off the top five list, and Josh is back at number one without question, because he's already got a win over Prograis. It wouldn't matter. But that's how boxing works. It's crazy. Like you said, what have you done for me lately?
Recency bias.
You can say this, but then it's like, all right, well, on Tuesday this, or Saturday, this fight happens. On Sunday, everything changes. Yeah. So it's that kind of – it's too early to speak on because there's too many question marks in the division at this point.
Well, long story short, it's a very deep, deep division. Teofimo Lopez is, like, towards the bottom of it because he only has one win in the division. He'll rise up to the top. He's fighting next weekend. We'll be there. And then you take a look, Gary Antoine Russell.
For him. Even Subriel Matias, I think he's actually really good.
A beast.
We just haven't seen him yet. We haven't seen him against those tip-top guys.
I think Matias is supposed to be fighting for one of those vacant belts that Taylor gave up. I think it's going to purse bid.
Dude, all those belts at 40 are stupid.
It's Taylor's. Honestly, they're Taylor's belts.
They're all Taylor's. Taylor's undefeated still. All those belts got relinquished because the governing bodies are greedy. It's bullshit, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he didn't want to. I don't know. He's going through some things with the whole Pro Bellum or whatever he was with Kinahan. He can't leave. He can't enter the U.S. So he pretty much gave up those belts. I honestly do think he's one of the top guys. Like, I'm just putting Catterall above because I thought he won. You know how I roll on the social media, trying to rile.
Well,
up
dude, you're the numbers guy. You're the objective information. I get it.
Yeah. So Regis Prograis wins. I want to see him in there next. Jose Ramirez, I think, is next in line.
Nice. Good
after fight. The fight, Prograis, they asked him, you know, who do you want to call out? And he's like, well, I don't have to call out anybody then. He goes, I got the green strap. Now they can come to me, which is like kind of new for Regis Prograis. I feel like he's always the one chasing big fights, but he'll get big fights. I mean, he's in a great spot he signed with Richard Schaefer and Pro Bellum. They don't have a network. He would be probably wise to sign with Top Rank considering the dearth of talent they have at 140, especially with Haney moving up. Teofimo's there. Jose Ramirez is at 140 with Top Rank. That's the move for Progre. That I could see him getting big fight. He's got to be in big fights from here on out. He's 33. He has a belt. He was on the shelf for fighting one time a year for the last whatever amount of years. So hopefully it's Jose Ramirez or it's Josh Taylor rematch or it's Teofimo, Devin Haney if he wants to move up to 140. There's so many names. 140 is amazing. Progre is back. I'm excited. I'm happy for him. Good dude. I think everyone can agree with that one. So that was the Marv Nation pay-per-view was interesting. This is like wasn't your typical ESPN telecast, wasn't Showtime telecast. It was like a skeleton crew put together. Dave Harmon, who was at HBO for a long, long time, a great, great director, was there. So it looked great. You had some interesting broadcast. Ray Mancini was on the call, who took a pretty broad swipe at CompuBox out of nowhere. You know, I'm sitting there working with my dad. All of a sudden, Ray's like, I don't like CompuBox. I thought that he landed more punches on the arms than the shoulders. I was like, dude, what? Like, Ray, you're a legend. I've got drinks with them and hung out with them on the road. Like, we don't count punches that land on the shoulders or the arms. That's not the scoring area. That was my only gripe with the night. It was that Ray Mancini was – it's tough when you don't call fights all the time. And, you know, he said that Jalilov was ready for Wilder. Tough night for Boom Boom. But all together, pretty good night of fights. Jalilov looked good. Who else? Charles Conwell got a win. The women's fight was awesome. Pretty good pay-per-view. I mean, all things good. A lot of people were going into this like, oh, is this really worth the money? I think if you bought it, you were pretty happy with it. And you even got some entertainment from Ray Mancini.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ray. He's awesome. Like I said, he's an icon of the sport. And I agree with you with commentating. Man, you gotta have your reps in and you gotta do it a lot and often. So, but I understand where Ray's coming from though, with the punches on the arms and the body, because CompuBox, you guys have covered a plethora of my fights, and I hit guys in their arms and their shoulders on purpose. And they're not scoring blows, but they do damage.
They do damage. It's like what you don't see.
And
it's like
affect the fight.
It's like in baseball, like when you don't see something that shows up in the scorecard, but it like affects the game. Like you hitting the arms and shoulders does slow the guy down, but that's like the judges. I don't know what they even look at that. Whatever. I don't want to get.
Well,
too
I
much
fought sense. I fought Emmanuel Taylor, and the round where I landed the least punches, I punched the hell out of his front shoulder. He fought with his arm down, and it was like the only round that I think people gave to him, and I was like, I beat the hell out of his front arm. And his left hook was his best punch. So pretty much the end of the whole last three rounds, he didn't use his left hand like that.
Yeah.
So it's not a scoring blow. Maybe I lost that round because of, in terms of CompuBox, but I wasn't landing scoring blows.
We busted
but I was,
that myth, Chris. We busted
I was
that
doing
myth.
Damage.
You don't.
Yes.
We busted that myth. The judges don't see the CompuBox. So.
Well, Teddy Atlas seemed to think that I lost that round, which I didn't agree with. But
you gotta take that up with Teddy. See, we all have our gripes. Like Ray Mancini, next time I see him, probably say something to him. Like, I'm sure Teddy, you're gonna keep that in the back of your mind with Teddy. Like, hey, you didn't score that round for me on ESPN in 2014.
Me and Teddy have a bunch of gripes, actually.
Well, he's an easy guy to disagree with.
Yeah, he had a lot to say about my fight with Bruce Lawn and the fight with Taylor. So,
well, he's got a lot to say in general. He's now like a UFC guy. True. Like, he took it way. Like, I'm casual MMA Dan. Well, I'll go to one MMA card a year, if that. And kind of like peak, he's gone full bore. Like he's like dumb at boxing, and he's like a full MMA guy now, Teddy.
Which is wild to even think about in the sport. Listen, I'm a kickboxer first, turned boxer martial artist, and I would never want to speak about MMA with any kind of certainty. Because has a guy ever wrestled before? Ever been on the ground? Like I was a good wrestler, and I would still hold my tongue if we were talking about MMA technique wise.
I think he kind of keeps it broad. He keeps it like, I'm Teddy Atlas and I know a fight. And, he probably likes the stand-up guys. If it gets to the ground, when I call
I certainly
all the time,
do.
I have no idea what's going on when they get on the ground. That's when I go to my color commentary. I mean, I've done – speaking of that, I did that this past – last week. The Bella Entertainment did a Broadway boxing at – where were we? Edison Ballroom. Dude, sick room.
Oh,
awesome
nice.
Night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had – there was food – people were eating dinner behind us, like steaks were being, and they had Sinatra on. You would have loved it. Sinatra playing in between rounds. Everyone.
Flying into New York that night. I missed the show because I literally came in that night. But
you
awesome.
You should have swung through. Me, Shackle, Chris Santos from Chopped was the judge. It was a grand time. I mean, Stephen Shaw was on the card. He fought Ryder. Who did he fight? Rydell Booker. Dude, Rydell Booker fought James Toney in 2004.
Yeah.
Only been dropped once his entire career, Rydell Booker. And he went the distance. Broken nose, went the distance. Good card. Mikhail Krebs was on the card. Mikey Williams. Fun. Haven't done commentary in a while. Felt good to be back in New York with the crew and Tabella. So that was a fun one. All right. So the regions, where are we now? Dillian White. Jermaine Franklin. Wow. A lot of thoughts here.
Fun fight.
Fun fight. We kind of knew it was going to be that interim because Dillian White is on the decline. Franklin undefeated, good boxer, not a lot of power, and I think it played out just like that inside the ring. I think if Franklin had any power, he probably would have got Dillian White out of there. If Dillian White was like 5-6 years younger and still was throwing 70 punches around, he probably would have got Franklin out of there. So therefore, you get yourself into a 7-5, 6-6 type of fight. 7-5 either way. I didn't score the fight. I was kind of just watching on my laptop and doing stuff at my parents' house. But I knew it was close. Like, robbery, no. Dillian White maybe won 7 rounds. Franklin could have won 7 rounds. I think this, what we got out of this is that White is just for the taking. I mean, next guy that comes in there, it's probably gonna be Anthony Joshua. Is probably gonna knock him out. What were your thoughts on this fight? It was a pretty good one.
Yeah, I liked Franklin. You know, seeing a heavyweight that throws combinations is hard. You don't see that these days. So he let his hands go. He had quick hands. He was tough too, because Dillian White can punch. And he cracked Franklin with some really big shots. And Franklin never really wavered. Entertaining fight through and through. Now, these guys are big. They're big guys. I love big guys who are throwing tons of punches. And that's what we saw. So it was a great fight. I'd like to see Franklin again. You know,
yeah,
I
think that's the thing. Franklin stock rose.
I think with those. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He was completely unknown. I had never really seen him. So even right away, I was like, oh, wow, this guy has fast hands and he throws combinations. I like that. So, and Dillian White, I have always liked. He's just very fun to watch. But I think you're right. I think he's very much right for the taping. I think that Anthony Joshua fight makes sense for Team Joshua. It's a comeback fight with a name guy who's coming off a win, and Joshua's probably going to knock him out.
Franklin came in a little – looked like he was a tad out of shape. If he would have just lost maybe 15 more pounds, he might have won the fight. Like, he might.
I don't know. How does he normally look? Some guys just look like that. I've never seen him another way.
I think the fight before that, he was a little bit lighter.
Okay.
So it's a little frustrating, but I mean, I'm sure he probably has a lot of regrets and like, man, if I would have just done this, I would have done that. You know,
when it comes to fighting, I've always had a saying, don't wake up on Sunday saying I should have done anything, you know, because regret's the worst thing in the world. That'll eat you alive for the rest of your life.
Well, he wasn't going to get he was going to take a lot for him to get the decision over there. Like, I was not
shocked.
He almost
did. I mean,
some of the scorecards were really bad. It could have went either way. I know he wasn't going to get it. David Hay, who I actually like, had the tough assignment of scoring the fight while calling the fight. He had three or four 10-10 rounds, which you don't see 10-10 rounds ever, but he had three 10-10 rounds, which if you really think about it, a 10-10 round is a Franklin round because he just didn't want to give the round to White. Because White's a matchroom guy, Hayes a matchroom.
I went to the living room to reheat my dinner plate, and my nephew yells in and he goes, "Hey, Uncle Chris, do judges give 10-10 rounds a lot?" I go, "No, they're really frowned upon. They really shouldn't." He goes, "Oh, well, David Hayes just gave like 3 or 4 of them." I'm like, "That's not good."
Is that your cousin, your nephew Mark?
Michael, the one who fights.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's your guy. I forgot to give him a shout out. He won a big tournament. So
he won the New York City Metros. Yeah, that's the next fighting Algerian.
Let's go. Yeah, but so even your nephew saw how bizarre that was. But obviously Dillian White they're setting him up to fight Joshua. Hearn said something after the fight that kind of like was like, oh really? Like they might build it up into like a summer fight for Joshua. But that should just be next. Like, why are we building that up? Like, why are we building that? Like, get to a whole other thing there with what Joshua should do next. Like, Joshua was talking about, he was there ringside. You know, maybe February. Like, maybe that's too quick for White. But if they
that's
offered White to fight in February, White's taking it. Like, of course. I mean, it's a freaking lottery ticket handed his way. And, you know, when he doesn't look great as of late, I thought that he had just enough to keep Franklin off of him, and Franklin didn't have enough on his punch to end the fight. I think that was a pretty
bad idea
way
to extend that fight, because if they put a fight in between, Dillian can lose.
Exactly. And I think
if I'm pushing for that Joshua fight right away. Let's get that thing going. Let's go in March.
And let's go in April. And if Joshua doesn't knock White out, I think that says a lot about. I think this is a fight that will tell you a lot about anything Joshua. If he can't score 100%. A knockout, if he can't knock out Dillian White in this fight, then you're gonna have a lot of questions about Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, we said that on previous shows that fight is probably gonna happen at some point, and it's probably gonna happen sooner than later. And the result of that fight is going to tell what the rest of Joshua's career is going to look like.
Over in the UK at the same time, of course, because boxing likes to do that. I had like multiple tabs open. ESPN Plus had John Ryder versus Parker, which was like a dud because of Parker's hand injury. Zach Parker broke his hand. People were saying he quit. Of course, he took to Twitter to show the X-ray. Took to Twitter to show his hand. It was huge. Fourth round. Didn't actually watch too much of it because I was watching the White fight. I was going back and forth. Can't really watch two fights at once. Like, I think action was just starting to about to heat up. And, obviously they're fighting for to be a mandatory for Canelo. Ryder wins. Ryder wins the fight by TKO because Parker couldn't go on because of the hand. And right away, Eddie Hearn has had the message out already. Texted Eddie Reynoso, we want Canelo. This is your tune-up fight. I wouldn't say front runner, but it's certainly the name that's being thrown out right now. We talked about this last week as well. Ryder was the guy we thought was going to win. He wins. Wasn't impressive because of Parker's injury, but it looks like Ryder versus Canelo is being talked about, like you said, maybe in Wembley, maybe in May. That's the latest with that fight.
Mark my words. That's going to be Canelo's next fight.
Okay.
Just write it down. That's the fight.
I just tweeted it.
And good for John Ryder. He deserves it. He beat Daniel Jacobs earlier this year, and then he just beat Zach Parker, who was undefeated. Granted, the way he did it wasn't fantastic. By the way, I'm going to speak on this because I've broken my hand many times in fights. I've never quit on a hand. I take that back. Not going to use the word quit. I've never stopped fighting because of a hand injury. Go out, fight. Guys have won fights with one hand. It was his right hand too. He can use that left. He can stick it. He can switch sides because I saw him do that a few times. He was switching sides during the fight. Dude, that's your shot. Go for it.
This is literally
that's your shot. Go for
it. This is it. A Canelo fight dangling out there. I mean, it must have been really bad for him. I don't know. You never know.
It's hard to say that, but man, go out on your shield. Try. I don't know. That's me. It's always been me. Everyone knows me as that guy. I guess, Zach Parker isn't that guy. But again, you can never speak to what the injury is. And hey, that might have been the good decision because that hand injury could be something that would affect him for the rest of his career. But you never know.
We'll see. Canelo Alvarez in the news too. You're a half Argentinian.
That's why I got this blue on. We're gonna talk about it. I figured.
Canelo versus Messi. That you think Ryder's the next fight? It's Canelo versus Messi. Clearly, if you've been like, what the hell is going on? Canelo is like tweeting more than he's ever tweeted in his life. His hand must be fine because he's tweeting like crazy. He's going after other Argentinian players. He's tweeting at these like Mexican journalists who are saying, "Calm down, Messi didn't kick the." So he didn't. I saw the video. It didn't look like he. Yeah. If no one, you have no idea what we're talking about. It looked like after Mexico lost to Argentina, got eliminated, they were in the locker room, and there was some type of jersey which looked like the Mexican jersey at the feet of Messi. Messi either looked like he like didn't like stomp on it. He like literally like just moved it out of the way with his foot. And Canelo starts tweeting like, "You better pray I don't find him. Did you see this shit? F you, everyone, just going scorched earth on Twitter." Maybe you would know this. I didn't even know you were a soccer fan until we started texting. Like, why was the Mexican uniform in the locker room of Messi? Do you know why?
So, there's no way to know. It could have been like a situation. Swap? It could have been a jersey swap, which is what I was thinking. And if you really look at the video, there's Argentinian jerseys on the floor as well. The guys just pulled their shirts off. They're all shirtless, and it's a locker room. Shit gets on the floor. I it didn't look like there was any kind of ill or malice, stepping on anything like that. That's... It looked like he was almost like he was kicking his shoes off, and that's where the jersey was. Wasn't looking at the floor either. I don't know. I just think that Canelo is pissed that they're 0-4 now against Argentina in the World Cup. They've played four times in the World Cup. Argentina has won every single time. And, you know, the guy needs a fight. You know, yeah, he's got a hand injury. He might be using tequila for his recovery, and he had a little bit of enjoyment that night and was pissed about the loss, which, dude, I get. I mean, I'm sure World Cup is huge.
Yeah, I think I'm rooting for Argentina now. Obviously because of
Messi, dude. I mean that's
beat. And then they said Messi's like one of the nicest guy. He's like one of the nicest guys, almost respectful guys. He didn't stomp on it. If he sat there and he was stomping on it, like, obviously we'd be like, what the hell? Like, why are you doing that? And Canelo would have a reason. I mean, this guy.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Yeah. He's always been a respectful guy in at least out in public in the media. And like you said, that's the word on the street. I would be very, very surprised. And plus, I think, you know, they're rivals, and they've been heated rivals for a long time. And I believe there's got to be a lot of respect there. So I don't know.
Canelo went off.
That's been a bit of a reach.
It's like out of character. Like, obviously, like, I tweeted, like, it was pretty funny. Like, there were some very good tweets going around.
The memes are hilarious.
Memes were great. Like, I saw one of the, you see that meme where a guy gets like thrown down the street and he's like rolling down the street, and it said, if Canelo ever finds Messi, like, people were saying, like, the soccer community saying, who is this guy? Which kind of blew my mind, because in our world, Canelo is Messi. Like, he's the biggest star. So one word name, he's larger than life. But in the grand scheme of things, in like the football world, like, there are some Messi people fans out there and some soccer fans are like, wait, who's that? Who is Canelo? Like, who the hell is this guy? Which blew my mind a little bit. Cause, like, obviously Canelo's everything for us.
We forget how big soccer is.
500 million Instagram followers for Messi.
Yeah. I was saying this yesterday. I'm like, the entire world plays in the World Cup. That's wild. Like, every country plays. Like, we all play each other. There's no sport that everyone does and competes. It transcends everything, and it's massive, massive support. So, like you said, Messi's got 500 million.
No, 381. I don't
want to. Okay, well, Ronaldo, I think, has 500.
Ronaldo has like 500. They won. They won this week. Portugal, USA got a big game too.
Yeah, they just won this afternoon. 2-0 against Uruguay, which was a good game and a tough matchup. I was impressed with Portugal.
There's a lot of crossover between soccer fans and boxing fans, because it's a global sport. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ethnic pride on the line. So I do see a lot of people on my timeline on Twitter that are watching the games. And, you know, I'll follow along. We'll see.
I'll be watching games all week. My schedule is clear for those games.
I'm on Team Argentina now. I'm sure Ronnie was here too. He'd say the same. I'm calling for Argentina. This is an Argentinian pod.
Let's go. From here on out,
we're gonna take this thing. We're gonna raise that cup.
Most of us Argentinians are Italian anyway, so you'll fit right
I'm
in.
Right in. Boom. Here we go. Yeah. All right. So that is that. Maybe Canelo will fight Messi. That was hilarious. Let's
that could be the comeback.
I'm sitting there Sunday night when this all happened, and I'm like, what? Like, what? I see Canelo tweeting like 4 or 5. He never tweets, and it's just like one after the next. And I was like, this can't be happening at 10 p.m. Like, Canelo.
Hey, fighters fight, man. The guy can't fight right now, so he's gonna fight on Twitter.
Well, what I said last to put a button on this, I said, this is the same guy who slapped Caleb Plant because Canelo thought motherfucker was, he meant that, he thought it was like a literal term, like Caleb Plant wanted relations with his mother. Mm-hmm. Like, so, and he went off the rails. Like, he's a very excitable guy. So, and now you throw in like Mexico, his team got embarrassed, like you said. Like, I kind of understand why Canelo was freaking out a little bit, but good entertainment for us. That was awesome.
Yeah, why not? Something to talk about.
Exactly. Another thing to talk about this weekend, it's the weekend of the trilogies, fight preview time. We got trilogies that you really want to see in Chocolatito and Charlie. You got trilogies that you probably were like, I don't need to see this again. I've told you the numbers where Fury has outlanded Chisora in 21 of their 22 rounds. I think a lot of fans don't understand why this fight's happening. Every time I look at anything on social media, whether it's Instagram posts or Twitter posts, I look at the comments underneath. No, people are not really happy about this fight. Don't really want to see it, but that's easy. It's easy to shit on this trilogy. How about we come up with ways to, like, why we want to watch it? What can you look for? Is it possible that Chisora can somehow beat Tyson Fury? We can be see history. Can we see a spectacle? All the above, none of the above, some of the above. What are some reasons? Why should we watch this fight? on Saturday afternoon, wherever you are over in the UK. We have a lot of UK listeners. Why should we watch Fury Chisora?
Number one, the trash talk leading up to the fight and the press conference is going to be awesome.
But is it real? Chisora, because I feel like they're friends.
Chisora, David Hay is Chisora's manager. They hit each other with glass bottles during the press conference. Doesn't matter. that picture of David Hay holding a water bottle and punching Chisora in the face is one of my favorite press conference photos ever. It's
or
insane.
Fury in a Batman uniform. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I mean they're gonna be selling. It's gonna be a spectacle up until the fight, and even then, I mean, listen, can he win the fight? No. I'm gonna. It's boxing and anything can happen. But
what are the odds? Pulling up DraftKings. They gotta be like. Are they bigger than Crawford Avizian?
It's gotta be. I'm
pulling them up right now.
It's gotta be Mike Tyson Douglas numbers 40-1.
It's -3,000 Fury. That's pretty big.
So what is that essentially? 30-1.
Crawford's -1,400, so it's double that. It's one of the bigger.
Like, I would put money on the Crawford fight. Like, any like lighter weights, it's I don't know. Like, Crawford's been out of the ring a while. You know,
yeah,
stuff happens.
At least this is, and I put together five reasons why you want to watch. You know me, eternal optimist. First of all, everyone's gonna be watching. That's the thing. Yeah. Like,
of course, it's Tyson Fury.
It's Tyson Fury, and it's a fight. Like, we literally will watch anything. Like, everyone was tuned in to Franklin versus Dillian White. Like, it's just boxing. We don't really get a lot of action during the week. This is it. Like, of course, we're going to tune in to watch Tyson Fury. So, number five, this is my five reasons why you want to watch. There will most likely be a knockout. It's heavyweight boxing. Tyson Fury is probably going to be delivering that knockout. He's sitting down more on his punches. Look what he did to Dillian White. I'm sure there's some people out there like to see Chisora. Laid out. There's going to be a knockout in this fight. So that's always fun to tune in. Number four, it's on ESPN Plus and it's on in the afternoon here in the States. You don't have to pay exorbitant pay-per-view prices. If you got the bundle like most people do, you put it on ESPN Plus, you can watch it on your phone and it's on in the afternoon. So you're saving money on pay-per-view. It's on the afternoon. You can still go out with your lady. You can still go out with your family. You can still go to dinner at night. You can do whatever you want. And you can watch Chuck Tito fight at night. So that's a pretty good reason. Number three, you can watch the fight. It's less time you have to spend with your family. Less time you have to talk to your family. Less time you have to just step away, watch the fight. Hey, I'm watching the fight. Oh God, that's right there. That's a plus. That's a positive. Number two, you're gonna like this, Chris. You're a historian. History. If Chisora somehow wins, which you don't think is gonna happen, I don't think anyone think that Vegas doesn't think it's gonna happen. Chisora wins, he becomes the first fighter with double-digit losses to win a world title since 1951. Jersey Joe Walcott.
That's cool. I like that.
You're throwing around Jersey Joe Walcott's name. You know it's historic. That's a name like you know they're fighting like this.
Yeah, Chisora ain't Jersey Joe though. Jersey Joe was slick and smooth and had game plans and setups. Chisora is a bite down your mouthpiece and throw haymakers guy.
Yeah, number one, it's Tyson Fury. I mean, it's going to be a spectacle. There's going to be a lot of people there. It's gonna
and
be
that's
insane,
the only one that matters.
There's going to be an insane walkout. It's going to be a scene. It's a heavyweight fight. Hopefully, another reason. If I had more, I would say it's just. Hopefully this brings us closer to either a Joshua fight or Usyk fight. I think Usyk's the one we really want to see. Maybe Usyk will be there. It's still a big attraction. It's not the one we all want to see, but it's a heavyweight title fight, and Tyson Fury's involved with it. He is one of the top fighters in the game. He's one of the best heavyweights ever to lace him up. Got some numbers for you. Of course, I got some numbers for you. Fury, defense. Let's keep an eye on this because you know that Chisora is going to try to get to him. Fury's opponents land just 6.2 punches per round. That is the fewest among all heavyweights, the fourth fewest among all fighters. That's impressive to me. Like being so big, being a heavyweight, being able to move and be that nimble at that height and to only get hit with 6.2 punches. And he's facing guys like Wilder. He's facing, it's got a pretty decent resume. Not the best resume at heavyweight, but it's pretty good. 6.2 punches a round for a guy that size.
Yeah, I mean, if you're averaging holding your opponents to less than 10 punches a round, that's insane. That's GOAT status. So, and Tyson Fury's, he's got the upper body movement. He's got the length. He's got the reach. he's just a massive, massive man, and he's wildly athletic. I mean, it's it doesn't make sense. Every time I watch him fight, I'm like, what is going on? How does that guy move like that?
That's a good enough reason to tune in too. It's like, to watch, like,
he's a spectacle.
I think I watched the last fight with my girlfriend. She's like, wait a second, that's the heavyweight champion of the world? Like, yeah. She's like, is that Tommy Fury's brother? Are they from the same family? I was like, oh, different moms, but same dad. John Fury, same dad. But yeah, he looks like his body is like, so he wears those tight shorts on purpose and like got a muffin top. He just doesn't look good with his shirt off, but man, he can fight like no other. And do you think it's gonna be like, it could potentially become like a brawl? Like, I could see that being fun. Like, we all thought that the third Fury Wilder fight was unnecessary. Not saying that this is on the same level, because it's not. Wilder is light years better than Chisora, but in the same ilk of, all right, like, we don't need to see this third one, but maybe it could be fun. Like, maybe it could turn into a brawl. Like, do you give Chisora any shot of, like, being able to, like, well, can you see, not shot at winning, but just, like, turning it messy?
If Fury wants it to be. If he wants to be entertaining, which he always does, he's an eternal showman. I could see him feeling out Chisora early, setting the tone and being like, you know what? This guy can't hurt me. I'm going to get inside. I'm going to fight. I'm going to make it a fight. Or I can see him going out there and just lighting Chisora up.
Dude, he might.
Either way, it'll be entertaining. If he wants to stand and fight and bang around, he'll do it. If he goes out there and just ices Chisora in a couple rounds, that's going to be like, all right, that's our heavyweight champion of the world. Welcome back, champ.
Yeah. Chisora opponents land almost 40% of their power shots. That's a lot.
Which is wild. The man's been stopped, and he still allows people to hit him like that. Like, he's...
Yeah, he's one of those, like, he's cojones. Like Joyce. He's like Joyce, where Joyce, I think, lands the same amount of power punches as he gets hit with. So, and Chisora's the same thing.
Yeah, but Chisora has been knocked cold in fights. Like, Joyce, at least, is the juggernaut. He doesn't hurt like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Chisora lands 41% of his power shots while getting hit with close to 39%. So he's in that club that you don't want to be
in. Almost 1-1.
You don't want to be in that 1-1 club. You want to try to avoid that. You want to be where Tyson Fury is. So that is Saturday afternoon. Good preamble to the main event of the weekend, in a fight that all fight fans are excited for. It's the crown jewel of the fight schedule for the rest of the year. Guess we didn't get a lot of big fights towards the end of their fourth quarter. This is a big fight to me, and that's Roman Gonzalez versus Juan Francisco Estrada. The rematch. First fight went down in 2008, I want to say. Even I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me. Somewhere, I think 2012. And now they fought last year. It's officially 1-1. It should be 2-0. Chocolatito. This is it. This is the big one. Going down in Glendale, Arizona. I'm excited. I know you are too, Chris. We're all fans of Roman Gonzalez. We're all fans of Juan Francisco Estrada. But Roman Gonzalez has a special place in my heart, has a special place in a lot of fight fans' heart. He's just a throwback fighter. Anytime he steps in the ring, it's appointment television.
Yeah, I mean, I've coined the nickname for him, a symphony of violence. The guy is beautiful to watch. The way he moves is so smooth and so pretty. You forget you're watching someone trying to destroy another man with punches, with his fists. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to watch. He will be sorely missed when he decides to call it a career. I am very excited for this fight. This is a massive fight with very small guys.
Yeah,
and
I love that.
If you're not a fight fan, if you don't know about these smaller weight guys, call your friends, tell them, tune in. This fight is a no-brainer. You're going to be an awesome matchup.
Well, he's like a big deal in that regard, is that he put the small guys on the map. Like, every small fighter underneath 126 pounds owes a debt of gratitude to Roman Gonzalez, owes a debt of gratitude to Suitman. For putting him on HBO and underneath those Triple G fights and showing the world Roman Gonzalez. You know, the hipsters, boxing hipsters, knew who he was. And then once he started fighting on HBO, it's like, oh, shoot. Like, this guy throws blistering combinations. This is like Manny Pacquiao. Like, this is like the closest. That's how I feel when I'm watching Roman Gonzalez fight. Not that he has the same style, but it's like, all right, we're never going to see his ilk again. Like, this is a very special fighter. Combination punching, just the career. Get into Chocolatito. I want to get into the overall, by the numbers, 24 rounds these two have fought, 4,662 total punches thrown, 1,381 punches landed. Chocolatito threw over 80 punches in 20 of the 24 rounds. Estrada threw over 80 punches in 18 of the 24 rounds. They went well over 100 in a number of those rounds. I think Chocolatito threw 150 in the final round of his last fight. It's just absurd. I mean, they threw more and landed in their second fight than they did in the first fight, 10 years apart. So that just shows that these guys are just made for each other. But they're going to throw punches and bunches. And with Chocolatito, it's like the last three fights I've watched of his, I'm like, all right, is this the night where he gets old overnight? Is this the night where he gets beat up? Is this the night where he just can't do it again? And I thought maybe it was going to be that in the second Estrada fight. Thought maybe it was going to be that in that Ray Martinez fight we saw last March. But he somehow defies the odds, warms up, and then by the third or fourth round, he's throwing 120 punches, and it's beautiful. So,
well, I thought he was done with the Rungvisai fight. I thought that was
when he got knocked out.
Yeah.
That was
and
disgusting.
Then he came back. Yeah, he came back and he's revitalized his career. That Ray Martinez fight was, I mean, for him to be able to come back the way he did against a young stud, I mean,
that was man versus boy.
Yeah. And it was supposed to be young lion killing the old lion. It was not supposed to go that way. The man excelled.
You know, in a day and age where you see most careers are like carefully curated, guys are protected, guys are moved along. I don't think we're going to see another Roman Gonzalez, and I'm hoping this isn't the last time we see him. You know, turned pro at 18. By 21, he was a world champion. 6 years later, he's pound for pound number one in the world. By 30, like you just talked about that Rungvisai fight, he's knocked out, written off, builds himself back up, captures another world title at age 33. That right there, that's just a career. That's why you have these feelings for the guy, because he does things like his career. We thought he was out. We thought he was done after that Rungvisai loss. For him to build himself up, you know, and knock out, I think it was Yafai, and become a world champion again after that, and now fighting at top level, beating these young guys, you know, beating Estrada is really good. You know, I thought he won that second fight. That's a Hall of Fame career. That's a generational talent, man. And I can't talk highly enough about this guy. I feel like I'm going over the top, but I also feel like it's not enough.
No, not at all. Because especially when you put it into perspective about those lighter weights, 30 is old. 33 is ancient for that weight class.
Yep.
So for him to be able to perform the way he has past 30 is unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. So it just extends his legend that much more. He is everything. He is that guy. And I cannot wait for him to fight this Saturday night.
Estrada. Let's talk Estrada. You know, I'm talking about all the numbers with Chocolatito. Like, obviously,
Estrada's awesome.
Estrada is like damn good too. Like, this is another
awesome
first ballot Hall of Famer. Ranks top 10 in almost every category in terms of punches thrown and punches landed. 25, he lands 25 around. He throws 75 punches around. Throws almost 55 of those are power shots. Those are all top 10 in all of boxing, not just in his weight class. A surefire Hall of Famer, a guy that's just perfect for he's perfect for Gonzalez. Like, I think Gonzalez is more of a combination puncher. Estrada has a better jab, a little bit better of a boxer, but jabs are
more explosive too.
Yeah,
he's more explosive.
Exactly. And the jab is not going to be a punch in this fight. I don't think.
No.
I mean, I think they're
going to be,
they're going
to be too close to each other to really even use it.
Exactly. They're going to go right back into the phone booth, and maybe there's a feeling around them for that first one. But then from round 2 to 12 or however long it goes, you're looking at close to 200 punches thrown between the both of them. Estrada's damn good. I mean, is this the night where he makes it, you know, 2 out of 3, or he wins that decisive win over Chocolatito in your mind?
Unfortunately, I do believe that is going to happen. And I say
with
a heavy heart.
I picked Estrada to win the last one too.
Estrada has looked really good as of late. And like you said, it's just a matter of time with Chocolatito. Is this going to be the one? I feel like he's already gone back to the well, you know, so many times and pulled out those victories that he's had recently. For him to do it again, I mean, it's the stuff of legend, honestly. But I'm
shocked,
picking Estrada. No. If anybody can do it, I mean, I'll probably cry tears of joy, but you know, I could see it too.
I know. I don't know who to pick. Like, I honestly thought that Ray Martinez was going to give him problems.
It
was like a new opponent on short notice, younger, you know, ferocious. I was like, all right, man, this isn't going to be good for Roma Gonzalez. And then he dispatches him. The second Estrada fight, I picked Estrada to win. Obviously, he's just fresher. He's just has more a couple more facets to his game. And I thought that Roma Gonzalez won the second fight. I mean, nothing that the numbers are the end all be all. He outlanded him in pretty much all the rounds, and you know, threw more punches and just did enough to win. But you know, like you said, Estrada's has looked good of late. But his last fight with RG Cortez, he was actually bloodied in that fight. He got hit a bunch early, but obviously his pedigree over the course of the fight rained out. But there were some moments in that fight where Estrada was hit, was tagged, got a lot of miles too. We talked about the miles of Roman Gonzalez. Estrada's got a lot of miles too.
Yeah, definitely. But Estrada's style, I mean, he gets hit in fights. Quadras dropped him early and had him in a lot of trouble, and you know, he came back to stop him. You know, he's there to be hitting, you know, both these guys are. I think defense, definitely, you're going to lean towards Chuck Liddell. But, you know, Estrada's, he's a warrior, man. He'll get dropped, he'll get hurt, he'll get clipped, and he's going to come right back, and that fuels him. He almost, I mean, like a true Mexican warrior, that's, you know, he's got that in him.
I think he's 32. So,
yeah, he's no spring chicken either.
I mean, these guys, the sad thing is, like, these super fly guys, once they burst on the scene for the mainstream boxing fans was,
yeah, it took their whole career.
17. So that was what, 5 years ago. So they were 28, 27, which is still pretty old for that weight too. These guys were, you know, like I said, Chuck Liddell turned pro when he was 18. He was a world champion by 21. Same thing for Estrada. Like, these guys had tons of success early on, and now they're fighting and they're getting their $1 million paydays now, which is great. And that's awesome. But this should be a trilogy that can be placed into the top trilogies, you know, especially if they give us like 12 rounds of 2,500 plus punches again
of mayhem. Yeah,
exactly. We're standing up and we're, you know, yelling at the TV and we don't know who wins at the end, or it goes to the scorecards again. This is a trilogy. This is one of those, you put that in the top 10 trilogies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it would be there deservedly. So, you know, just to harp on a point that you were talking about, Kevin Kelly, the Flushing Flash, he was another guy. He didn't break onto the scene where, you know, he was out there and other people knew him until way late in his career. We didn't see him at his best. Like, you know, we fought Nazim Hamed. You know, he was handpicked for Nazim, and he still made that a war. That fight was awesome, but that was not the best version of Kevin Kelly. It wasn't his best weight class. That happens all too often with these smaller guys. But like you said, Chuck Liddell is one of those guys who kind of paved the way. It's like, wow, these guys are really, really talented, and they deserve the spotlight, and they deserve that green. So hopefully it opens the door for a lot of these younger guys, to smaller guys to make it sooner.
Yeah, Bam.
Which we're seeing with Bam, which is cool.
Yeah, he left the division. He went back down to 112. He's got work to do there. The winner of this, not that I'm trying to look past it, but the winner of this could fight the winner of Ioka Franco, who are fighting on New Year's Eve in Japan. Fernando Martinez is the IBF champion. But it is, in a way, like, this obviously will be the last time they fight. And, you know, they're getting up there in age, and we're seeing the younger guys kind of take over. Like, this is like, if you want your throwback feeling of like the HBO days or like a past generation, then, you know, Roman Gonzalez is your guy. And like, this fight is the fight to watch. It's interesting to see how this division is like starting to change. And, you know, I don't think Estrada or Chuck Liddell got many more fights left in them or at that top level. So it's going to be a turnover, whether it's Ioka, whether it's Franco. But it's interesting to take a look at what Superfly is. And, you know, it's exciting that you wouldn't even think a few years ago that one of the biggest fights of the year could be taking place at 115.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. But I mean, it's never been the case. But hey, man, it's 2022. Things have changed.
Things have changed for sure.
And I'm for it. I'm for it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, maybe should I just stick with what I've been picking, like, and just say that Roman's going to lose and that therefore he'll win, like, right? If we're going back,
you are the numbers guy. You are the numbers guy. If you go by the numbers.
I'm going to fade myself here. I'm going to go against I never root for anyone. I don't think I've ever rooted for a fighter since like I was 10 years old when I watched Arturo Gatti for the first time. I would like to see Roman and Gonzalez win. I'll just say it right now. I would like to see him win the fight. I would like to see him reach that and get the just due. I'll pick Gonzalez to win a split decision. You're going with Estrada?
I'm going with Estrada, split decision. I think it's going to be a nip type all the way through. It can't not be. I will tell you this, though. I will not be scoring it on Friday night. I'm gonna sit back and I'm going to enjoy every second of that mayhem that those guys are going to bring in that ring.
Just I don't see back how could be and a bad forth fight. Action.
Nah, I mean, I've jinxed like myself before by saying that. I've jinxed myself on here by saying that, but I don't know. I think this is a can't miss.
Yeah, the tailor made for each other, the perfect big fight. This
and it could be the last time we see either one of these guys. You don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like that's what I've said for the last three, and like I think fans could appreciate that too. It's like it's also great that like Roman Gonzalez and Estrada and all the Superfly guys. I think Chocolatito is like the king of the Superflies. That like. They're getting their just due. Like, they're getting this main event. Like, it's a big fight, and all fight fans, like, even Dame Lillard, NBA All Star, huge boxing fan, was talking about it. He was tweeting about this fight. He's like, Chocolatito's my guy. Like, that's crazy. Like, 5 years ago, you would never think that was possible.
No, not at all. And like you said, he has transcended the weight class. He's transcended the sport, even, obviously. I mean, we've been gushing over this man this whole time, and he deserves it.
No, because it's just fun to watch. I mean, it's just like it's just really fun boxing, like combination punching. We talked about this on the show too. It's like you don't really see it too much that often. You see one punch, two punch, out, in and out. This guy to be a combination puncher at that weight and that age and take that into your
and that level too.
At that level too, and like yeah, it's something to watch. So I think all the fans, especially listen to this. I just pumped myself up for this fight. And you're picking Chisora, right?
Yeah, first round knockout, Chisora.
Chisora, first round knockout, Estrada win.
Put that money in.
Chris Algieri's card. That's it for the show this week. Next, I think on Monday we will have a post fight podcast. Next week we have some fun stuff planned. Chris will be flying in New York City. We'll be at the John Boy offices. We'll have a show from the studio. I'm going to try to attend the TFMO. You're going to try to go to that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going, then why not? I'll be in town.
Yeah, TFMO fighting next weekend.
I'll go see my top-ranked family.
The top-ranked fam, they'll be in town. TFMO versus Sandor Martin. That was news. Replacement for Pedraza, who got sick, non-COVID.
Still an important fight and a meaningful-ish fight, but I'm very much less excited about this one than I was.
Really? I'm more excited. Nah. I think he beat Mikey Garcia.
Half a foot out the door.
I wouldn't even say half. He had like 9 toes out the door, Mikey Garcia.
Yeah.
But Sandor's pretty good. So that's next week. Obviously, Terrence Crawford fights next week over on BLK Prime. We saw this past weekend what the Marv Nation pay-per-view looked like. We're going to see what the BLK Prime presentation looks like. So that's what's going on in the boxing world. It's December already. It's the final month, the final push towards the end of the year. We've got a lot going on in the John Boy boxing world. There's some fun stuff planned. That's it, Chris. Going to be a fun weekend of boxing. Remember, as always, keep your hands up. Check yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We out.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.